So when we recorded Giant Robots for the years, we would always record the instant the call connected. And I would just like talk to somebody and talk to somebody. And I'd start asking questions. And like 5 or 6 minutes in, they would almost always be like, wait, is this the podcast? And I'd be like, yeah, it's the podcast. And they'd be like, oh.
And did you always edit that part out?
Or what? I don't know. I never listened to them.
I feel like I never heard that. And I listened to most episodes of Giant Robots, especially in the first few years where it was actually about programming.
Yeah. Yeah, I shared that first one that I recorded, that number one.
Yeah, that's a good episode.
So nerdy. It's still good, yeah. I think polymorphism versus conditionals is a great topic that people should talk
more about.
Those
are some of my favorite pieces of ThoughtBot content, was Ben and Joe talking about something, whether it's on like a video or a podcast. Or
Joe was a gold mine. Joe made me such a better programmer. Yeah,
I feel like he is a very under the radar, super smart guy.
I mean, it sort of made sense to pair me with him because I was like happy to like get the stuff, like be the face basically and take credit for his good ideas.
Sure.
Like refactoring from good to great was like basically just a bunch of stuff I learned from Joe and turned into a talk. Yeah, yeah.
Joe by Ben.
Yeah, exactly. I owe everything to Joe Ferris, but he's not a spotlight guy.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I haven't really seen anything public from him in years.
Yeah. And so. You probably won't. I just think that's just not what he wants to do. But like he used to run these weekly dev discussions at ThoughtBot. And like he would come with like a code, a few examples and some topics. And it was just like every time it was like I learned so much. It was crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Yeah. ThoughtBot always gave the impression of having a very good culture for people wanting to get better at programming.
Yeah, totally. I think that was probably kind of the defining characteristic of ThoughtBotters, actually. Yeah, it was like caring a lot about the craft of code. Yeah, maybe too much. Like I remember an ex-ThoughtBotter saying, like describing some of the code that ThoughtBot wrote as like consultant code, where it was like, you know, philosophically pure. Or like it, you know, adhered to how we believe the world should work, and was like maybe a bit too beautiful, given like what the clients needed.
Yeah, I mean, it is admittedly funny how much less I care about that now. Yeah, couldn't really care less as long as things work and are sort of at a high level, structured in a way that I think models the problem accurately, so that I know we're not like digging ourselves into a horrible hole. Then I'm not that concerned about like what an individual file looks like anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yep. It's like the bell curve meme. Have you seen this? Where like the beginner is like, just put it all in one file and don't worry about it. And the middle is like, no, you have to decompose it. It has to be perfectly factored. You have to test every piece individually with beautiful unit tests. And then the end is, just put it all in one file. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say like,
I don't know. Seems to work.
I think deciding how beautiful it needs to be or like how much effort you need to go into polishing it is one of those like experience things that you learn too. It's like part of the journey into wisdom.
What's tuple? Just main.c?
Yeah, it's just one big C file. I don't know, man. I have no idea.
That's funny.
It's not my domain anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird, right?
It is weird. I just for kicks, I opened up a PR the other day because we had a new employee start. And like I think it's his first PR. And I was like, oh, man, nice. He's contributing. And I just looked at it and I was like, yeah, I don't really know what any of this means. It's all C++.
Yeah. A lot of mallocs and freeze and
maybe
macros and I don't know, whatever.
Yep. Yeah, funny. Lots of pointers. Pointers.
Yeah, lots of asterisks everywhere. Mm-hmm. A couple next to each other sometimes.
Believe it or not, you can make software out of that stuff.
It's true. Yep. It's true. That was one of the most confusing concepts for me to learn when I was learning to program was pointers, I think. They seem very straightforward in retrospect. But
yeah. Did you read the Joel Spolsky article about pointers?
I don't think so.
He had this theory that pointers were an example of a... phenomenon technology where the people that were going to become programmers understood them and people that couldn't and wouldn't did not. Like there was something about that extra hop of indirection or like abstraction or something where some people were just like, yeah, I cannot really get this into my head. And like those are the people that would like wash out of the computer science department.
That's just like the skill testing question.
Yeah, there's something about them, I guess, in his theory.
Interesting. I could see that being true.
Yeah. So I'm hiring, I think I'm going to hire a guy to build me a desk setup.
I saw you tweet about that. And you found someone to do that?
Maybe. So I tweeted that.
Virtually or in person?
No, like in person.
Okay.
So I tweeted about saying like, you know, I want someone to build me like an amazing, like, you know, our battle stations caliber setup, including audio, visual, all that stuff. And Aaron Francis, who was our new marketing engineer, was like, oh, CC, whoever this person is, I think you'd be good at this. And we started chatting and he DM'd me a little bit and we're going to at least talk next week about what that would look like. And he seems to have a lot of expertise in this.
Does he live near you or is like part of this productized service include you paying for a plane ticket for him to come here?
I think it probably includes me flying him to us. But like that's all right. Yeah, like, the budget's there.
I know. It's like it's probably like what a $300 plane ticket or something, right? And then
Yeah,
I don't know. When you're willing to spend like $5,000 to put it all together, like who cares?
Right. Yeah, I'm not looking for the budget option. I'm looking for the make it really good option.
Yeah. I am in a similar boat for, like I was talking to you about moving my office to this other room in the house, and I want to get back into doing like more screencasting and stuff, and I want the on-camera stuff to be really good. And I don't think I care to do all the work myself to learn how to do all the lighting stuff and everything. So I want to find someone locally, which I surely has to be possible because of how many people just run like photography studios or do like videography, like in every city in the world. That'll just come to my house with all their lighting stuff and set it up perfectly and then make me a list of everything that I need to buy to just like recreate that exact thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking to go even further. I don't even want to buy the stuff or set it up.
I don't want to do that either, but I admit I feel like I have had a hard time getting full service solutions for anything in life to the degree that I would really want it.
You know? I feel like that's the theme of your life.
Yeah. Feels like I always have to do a little too much myself. Mm-hmm. Like we've gotten a little better at finding people to do stuff like that though. We had like some renovations done in our living room and historically it feels like you'd have to find the person to do the design, then find the contractor yourself and be like the middleman the whole time. And it's just like, no, thank you. Who is the person that I can just hire who is the pointer to all those other things, you know?
The way I described it to this person was like, I want to go away for the weekend and come back and have this thing done.
And just be like, wow, this is sick.
Yeah, exactly. And if I can see a single cable, you failed.
Yeah. I did all that myself for this office and it's actually kind of fun. And it turned out pretty good, I think, but I would have paid to not do it myself. So what else is new?
Going along with my theme of hiring people, I also hired a mobility guy.
Interesting. Is that in person?
Yep. So somebody's going to be start coming to my apartment a few times a week to basically make me do mobility workouts that I cannot
stretches
make myself
and
to do.
All that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So like I'm working on like my squat, like actually having like I want to be comfortable in a deep squat, like hang out. Like some people could just like hang out.
Like
there.
How a little kid can, you know, just like with their heels flat on the ground, just play for 2 hours.
Yeah. It's like I'm tired. Let me rest. Boom. Drop into a squat.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I want.
That's not rest for grown-ups.
Oh my God.
Typically.
I will. Yeah. That's torture for me, basically.
Yeah.
So that also
has that started yet? Or
yeah. I had my first one yesterday.
How is that?
It's good. So he's like part, as he calls it, manual therapist. So like he does like massage, basically, or like active release therapy, and part kind of just like mobility coach, PT kind of guy. And so he like basically ran me through some assessments to sort of see what was good and what was not so good. He said I was mostly okay, which is, you know, I feel pretty all right about. He was like, you're fairly athletic. And I was like, all right, nice. I'll take that.
Yeah. My big one has always been ankle mobility. My ankles have always been like...
Same.
Yeah, rough. So squatting, I've always like squatted in Olympic weightlifting shoes with like a 3/4 inch heel, which like changed everything, because otherwise my balance was always messed up because you'd hit this range of motion in your heel where it just couldn't, or in your ankle where it just couldn't go forward anymore. And then the rest of your body has to compensate for that all the way up the chain and all these like brutal ways. I have
that exact problem.
Yeah.
So working on some ankle flexion. I felt kind of like more stiff and like my posture's not quite as good as I want it to be. And like that's been true for just, I don't know, a decade. And I just like, I kind of half-heartedly do stretching and mobility semi-frequently, but like not enough, I guess, to combat my lifestyle. So it's like, all right, I'm going to throw a lot of money at this and pay someone.
If you throw money and someone showing up to an appointment at basically anything, you can solve it, I think.
That's kind of my theory.
The appointment is the real trick.
It helps a lot.
If you have to tell somebody, I don't feel like doing this today.
Yes. Come up with an excuse. Yeah,
that's enough friction, you know?
Yeah, and mess their day up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if they're getting paid anyways, maybe they don't really care, but...
Yeah, but being like, oh, last
that's going to be a churn problem, though.
Yeah, we'll see. So I'm hoping this will finally be the thing that solves this, and I'll be walking around, and I'll be like, wow, I have full range of motion everywhere. My posture is perfect. I'm a fully expressed human.
Yeah. Let me know how that goes. Okay. That sounds like a nice way to exist.
This is the new theme of Art of Product. It's just Ben throws money at problems and have someone else solve them.
Yeah. Do you still have like your personal assistant, your in-home personal assistant and all that stuff? Or I can't remember what happened there.
Yeah, technically, yes. But like, I don't really have enough for her. Like, I just
Didn't you want to have someone like do all your cooking and all that stuff?
I'm still working on that. My assistant, I kind of don't trust to set that up. Like, she's just like that's the problem. So the part of the problem is she's not good enough. I sort of need to fire her, but I don't actually have that much stuff. Like, what I would love to be like, hey, I don't have a chef, get a chef. But like, she tried and like, she didn't do that great a job. And so it's like, I don't know. I'm back to the assistant drawing board.
Just got to cook your own meals like a plebe.
I have to Uber Eats it myself and like tap on the 4 buttons.
Yeah. And but, then wait.
Wait. It's so lame.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard way to live.
Yeah, I have a lot of real problems.
man. Yeah. Yep.
So what product are you going to make?
We are working on sort of a pretty big Tailwind UI improvement at this point. I feel like we may have even talked about this on the podcast in different ways before, but I feel like the thing that's been missing for a while is just like a more traditional sort of template product. Like a lot of people just want website templates, not just individual components. I think the individual components were a smart place to start because they have like really broad appeal and feel like you can do a lot more with them. But there's a lot of limitations just because of the delivery mechanism where we don't get an opportunity to sort of show you how to really structure a full project well, because everything has to be in this copy and pasteable snippet. So we want to do these sort of like example projects / website templates where we can be a lot more creative with the design and not try and like with Tailwind UI, it's everything. We want everything to fit well together. So there's sort of some constraints in terms of, well, we can't have square buttons in this template and then rounded buttons in this one, because if you use them on the same site, they're going to look weird. But if we build full-on site templates as sort of example projects, we can get a lot more creative with the actual design. So we've been working on that. We're kind of aiming to launch like 6 to 9 of them end of May, beginning of June. It's been hard to get right, but because there's so many trade-offs, especially around like trying to make a template that a lot of people can use. It feels like the template has to get worse and worse and worse to appeal to more and more people, which then makes it like appeal to nobody. I've tried to convince myself that the positioning to take on these is not to really worry too much about making website templates that really work for people in terms of I'm about to host a conference and I want like the perfect conference starter kit that will work for any conference, because every conference kind of has a different vibe, you know? So you kind of want the design to be different. I'd rather have like six conference site templates that are all take really bold opinions in different parts of the design spectrum than have like one that tries to appeal to everybody. And I also think a lot of people who this stuff would appeal to have a different like job to be done, which a lot of the time is be inspired or learn how someone really good at Tailwind builds a complicated design with Tailwind, learn how someone combines Tailwind with React to make a really maintainable website, learn how someone customizes their Tailwind configuration to support a design that doesn't match sort of the defaults that come with Tailwind, like much more educational than actually like, here's an off the shelf, no code template for someone who's just trying to bang out a template and host it on a website. Because we want to appeal to developers, not to people who, not to no coders or something, you know, which I think is what like website templates are often targeted at. So yeah, we're working on like six or somewhere between 6 to 9 templates right now. We have like a conference site we're working on, a couple podcast website templates, and something like a podcast website is like, we can make a really good podcast website template, but how many of those are we really going to sell? You know, how many people out there are shopping for a podcast site template that use Tailwind? Like maybe we sell, if we were lucky, we'd sell like 100 of them, you know, and that's not worth it to even make. I don't think there's enough ROI on that for us. So we're not really looking to sell them individually. We will, but it's the product is really this Tailwind UI all access thing where you get access to all the components, all the templates. And my hope is that it'll appeal to people as like a treasure chest more than like, I need this one thing that solves my one problem.
Are you going to give it to everyone that's already purchased, or is there an upsell?
It's undecided. If it's an upsell, it'll be extremely cheap. Like when we did the e-commerce upgrade, it was like $30 for people. So this one would be like cheap again, or possibly free. It's always one of the biggest things that I haven't figured out that I think I have opinions on, but I always like start getting scared about, is how much we need to worry about being able to keep selling things to our existing customers versus always looking for new customers. You know, like a traditional SaaS business, your main source of revenue is rebilling people that have already paid you over and over and over again. And our entire business is built on finding new customers who have never given us a dime every single day, which I think to a lot of people with recurring revenue sounds like terrifying and awful, but somehow has seemed to work so far. The fact that it's worked so far makes me feel like I should try to stop being so paranoid about not being able to, you know, create new things to sell to our existing audience. Because if that was really a problem, we would already be facing a problem, and we're not. You know what I mean? But it is hard with new products to kind of accept that. I watched that talk by Chad from MicroConf a couple of years ago, the everything you've learned at MicroConf is wrong or whatever talk. And it kind of, that's the thing I think to a lot, because his business is like that in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know how many repeat customers he has, but in my mind, I sort of imagine it to be not that many. Like somebody who spends $4,000 on a board game table is like going to pass it down to their kids. They're not going to buy another $4,000 board game table the next month or something. So that kind of made me feel like better about that. Like, sure, recurring revenue would be better. Sure, expansion revenue would be better, but all of those things that make it better are like well above like the threshold of the business can be successful. You know what I mean?
Your non-recurring revenue business makes a lot more revenue than a lot of recurring revenue businesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for this? You're saying that like you don't, like you do or you don't want to charge for this new thing?
Well, that's the thing. There's two sides to it. One is like, okay, well, with the e-commerce launch that we did, we charged everyone $30 or whatever. And we actually made like a bunch of money from that, like 500 or 600 grand from recharging existing customers or something. Maybe it wasn't quite that much. Maybe it was more like 300 grand or something. but, you know, a bunch of money. We could do that again, but what's worth more, like a $20 upgrade to a bunch of people or just giving it to all those people for free and having really happy customers who go on to tweet about, I bought Toe & UI 2 years ago and I'm still getting new stuff today. Best investment I ever made, you know, like, because people do that currently and it's great. And the vast majority of our revenue, of course, comes from new customers anyways. So does it make more sense to try and make decisions that help new customers convert or make, like, that would be, you know, because it gives us more social proof and better kind of standing in the community, or make decisions that, you know, try to maximize the revenue from the people who are already paying attention to us, you know? And I don't know. It's tricky. One thing I think we're going to experiment with when we release this update is subscription billing just for team customers, business customers. Like right now, Toe & UI is the team product. It's like $800 or something. And we basically just give you permission to share your credentials with the other people on your team, because there's nothing user specific about your access to the product. So having separate accounts for people is just like overhead in a lot of ways. The plan anyways that we were thinking to experiment with is subscription billing for teams, or maybe it's a bit less than that, but it's billed annually. And now there's actual like team access control features. And the justification is like, well, people are going to be leaving, people are going to be joining, whatever. I think if we wanted to experiment with subscription billing at all, experimenting with it on business customers is a way better experiment than experimenting with it on everybody. So it might work, it might not work. It's an easy one to roll back, thankfully, if it doesn't work, but curious to try it anyways and just see, can we get a little bit of that recurring revenue, peace of mind, you know? Yeah, so that's what we're kind of working on, building out these templates. They're going to be, the thing I'm most excited about is it gives us an opportunity to like demonstrate that we can build high quality end products with Tailwind. And you can look at the project structure, you can sort of see how we created components for the different pieces of the page and what the APIs are for them and how they're sort of composed together in a way that we can't do when we're just like, here's a pricing section for a page. It has a button in it that looks exactly like the button in the hero that you copied, but they just have to be duplicated pieces of code because the snippets are totally decoupled from each other. And that's something that's always just bugged me. Like, it sort of felt like it's necessary, you know, to deliver things in that way, but it's always made me like insecure about like, do people think that I'm a bad programmer because I can't demonstrate that I know how to like build a website properly, you know? So this feels like a good way to scratch that itch. And also, yeah, let us design things that are different. It's sort of always felt like such a waste to have two really incredibly talented designers on the team and be like, the only color you're allowed to use is purple. And every button has to have this border radius. And, you know, it's so stupid. Like, we should be leveraging the fact that the guys that work here make like some of the most awe-inspiring UI work on the internet, and using that to pull people in and sell them our stuff. Because Toe & UI, I think, looks good as in terms of trying to be this sort of universal look, but there's only so exciting you can go with that. You have to be really safe, and that's doesn't get as much attention as trying to build stuff that is a lot more off the wall or just bold, you know?
How do you feel when you see Toe & UI designs in the wild?
I wish people did more with them, like tried to adapt them more to their own brand or made customizations to them and stuff. I think a lot of people just kind of use them exactly as they are, or like make changes that make them worse in some ways, you know, but it's a hard thing because the people who benefit from this stuff are typically people who don't consider themselves to be great designers. So we can help them get started, but it's tough to get to have people automatically make customizations that are good. So a lot of times people just don't, because they don't want to screw with something that's good enough. I mean, one of the original ideas we had for all this template stuff was to sort of create case studies for each one that tried to tie them back to Tailwind UI, because one of the other benefits of making these templates is that we can sort of harvest ideas from them to put in Tailwind UI. So James might design like a hero for a SaaS landing page that we think is really good. It wouldn't fit in Tailwind UI exactly the way it is, but we can sort of see like, we don't have one that has this shape and structure with these elements to it. Let's replace your like pill-shaped buttons with the Tailwind UI buttons, replace the font with the Tailwind UI font, and like it goes in the pattern library basically. Yeah, I had this idea to create these case studies that would sort of like dissect the templates and be like, this is where these pieces came from in Tailwind UI. These are the changes that we made to get here, and sort of help people get a better sense of like what you can do to that sort of stuff. We might still do that, but trying to focus right now on just doing the actual work that's in front of us and not get too ahead of ourselves.
Mm. You mentioned something earlier about the recurring revenue, like leading to peace of mind. And my first thought was like, I wonder if that'll actually work. Because I feel like I know a lot of people with recurring revenue businesses that don't have peace of mind.
No, I don't think it will. I think a peace of mind is a facade.
Yeah.
But
as your income goes up, like the thought of losing that new level of income becomes stressful. And so it's like, even though you'd be returning to a level you were at previously and we're fine, you still have that loss. And so, yeah. It's,
yeah. Yeah. I don't know why it feels different, because it's probably not like, you know, it's easy to tell myself, well, with Tuple, everyone would have to cancel for you guys to stop making money. For us, like, all it would take is for people to stop coming to the website and buying it. And it's sort of different, but not really. You know, like, yeah, everyone could log into their Tuple account and hit cancel today if they wanted to. Is that actually going to happen? No. Are people going to stop finding our product on the internet and stop thinking it's a good solution to their problems? Like, probably not either, you know, maybe less, but I don't think it would like just turn off. Yeah. I don't know. That was like another thing from Chad's talk. When he was talking about the recurring revenue versus one-time sales thing, he mentioned like, he says something like with one-time sales, everyone says that you're starting from scratch every single month, and that with recurring revenue, you're not, because you have your customers from last month still. But his argument is like, well, you're not really starting from scratch, because all of your traffic from last month is still here. Your SEO is still there. All your marketing is still there. You know, the things that got you the other customers are still there. So if it works, it works.
If you walk down Main Street and look at all the businesses that are on it, they're all one-time sales.
Yeah, most of them don't have subscription revenue. Yeah, I think the one thing that is a little different that does make me think, but Chad's example is still the one that makes me feel best about it, is like Starbucks is a recurring revenue business in a way. They're selling to the same customers every single day. It's not like every single day they can only sell coffee to people who have never bought from Starbucks before. Whereas we kind of have to only sell to people who have never bought from us before, because there's nothing for the people who've already bought from us to buy.
Especially if you keep making it free when you make new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And our stuff isn't like consumable, you know? I think that's something I saw Nathan Barry talk about in an email or something, with like recurring revenue and consumable goods are generally equivalent in that sense. You know, if you run out of something and have to buy it again, that's basically the same type of product as a recurring revenue product. But something like, yeah, a really expensive custom board game table, you know, lasts forever. And it's like, damn it. Why couldn't I just make it self-destruct after some period of time? You know?
Well, and for what it's worth, Chad has now making more and more board games.
I know. I did see that.
So that's becoming a bigger part of his
business.
So he is
doing things that sell to his existing customers.
Yep. And that he can release new ones all the time. Like, he runs like 3 Kickstarters a year for 3 new games.
Yeah. And the way that I would do that is I would just charge someone $1,000 one day and say, you can get every board game we'll ever make in the future for free. And yeah.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is probably dumb.
How much more do you want or need?
nothing. I don't need anything. So it doesn't really matter. The only risk with doing things that way, in my mind, is creating false expectations that we actually will always be making new stuff and that every month you should expect a new thing to be made, which I think is something you have to be careful of. It's like you're paying for what's there. And if we add new stuff, it's free because who cares? But if we don't, like, you know, you're not paying us every month. So just chill. But yeah, I think the thing that works against us in some ways is the whole positioning of trying to design these templates in a way that the appeal is the collection of them, not the individual ones, you know, because you want to have like this big all access sort of resource where if we're going to charge for each one individually, then it feels like each template has to be designed with ROI on that individual template in mind. And I hate that constraint. To me, that's like a creativity killing constraint. It's like every template has to appeal to at least 1,000 people to be worth making. Whereas if a template and appeal in the sense that they actually have a problem that template solves, so they pay money to have it. Whereas taking this sort of collection, get everything approach, I feel like we can do something that doesn't solve a real, that isn't like a website 1,000 people need to deploy, but has value in other ways. Like just has some cool, demonstrates some like cool trick that someone might be able to pick up something from that they just like have access to. It kind of feels like, I don't know if this really is the perfect analogy, but I've been looking for analogies in like everything I do in life now. And I feel like buying a Disney World park pass for the day feels similar to what we do. Like you're not going to Disney World, lining up for a ride, paying money for that ride, going to another ride, paying money for that ride. There's so many rides and experiences that they just couldn't justify offering if they had to charge for every single one individually, you know? Because there's a lot of things that just don't really pay off on their own, but as like small parts to this whole experience, like pull people in and make the whole thing feel more exciting. Like they're not going to do a parade that they have to charge money for, you know? So I don't know if that's a perfect analogy, but it was something that I thought of when we were there the other week. And I was just like looking around at all the things that they invest in that, you know, only have ROI because it contributes to the whole experience and they're selling that one experience.
The Tailwind UI experience pack.
Tailwind World. That's Tailwind the next, the next product. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think the educational part is an interesting angle on that. Like I'm thinking back to Upcase, where like one of the benefits was you got access to the
Upcase. Getting this Upcase source code. Yeah. Yeah. And no one could deploy their own Upcase, but people wanted to see how Upcase was made. I was one of those customers, you know, that downloaded that source code and studied it. And the funny thing about that too, kind of ties back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't know if we captured this for the actual recording or not, but about sort of the obsession of craft being part of the ThoughtBot culture. It justifies being obsessed with the craft when like the product is the source code for the app. You know what I mean? Not necessarily the app itself.
You can kind of look for interesting things to build or like interesting solutions to problems and feel like, yeah, this is time well spent because other people will learn from this exploration.
Yeah, yeah. My hope is that that appeals to enough people to be worthwhile. Not that it's necessarily like, oh, that's the best, most money-making decision, because I feel like Theme Forest is like the best, most money-making decision. You make a marketplace, you do whatever, you try to solve every single use case you can think of and crank out as much as you can. For me, it's more just like, how can I find the right balance between like what I want to prioritize and focus on and think is fun and a good way to spend my time and have it appeal to enough people to be a successful business. Like something I think about a lot is like a music analogy. And I've said this out loud before, and maybe I've even said it to you, but I never want to be like the band who's trying to like figure out what songs they have to write to sell the most records. I want to be like the band who's just trying to write the music that they were really excited about and just cross their fingers that it resonates with enough people that a few hundred people come to their concerts and let them live off doing it, you know? That to me feels like the ideal life.
Totally. And it sounds very you to me, honestly.
Sure.
just feels like your style, and I think that would like just like fit with how you operate.
Yeah, that's the idea.
I would bet on that working. Like knowing you.
Yeah, so far it's worked, you know, and if it stops working, it also doesn't really matter. I mean, like the other sort of like more selfish angle behind the whole sort of one-time sale, try and capture lifetime value up front sort of move is just that open source tools and developer tools have a curve of excitement associated with them, you know? I have no idea how long Tailwind is going to be the styling solution that people are really super pumped about and excited about. So if we want to make the most of it, like capture as much of it now while it's popular. And that doesn't mean like screwing people over, of course, like we were just talking about. Like the whole idea is that what's for sale today is worth the price that's being charged for it. You know, if 4 years from now, it's not the hot thing anymore, I'd like to feel like we made the most of it, you know, instead of trying to design the business in a way that was optimizing for like long-term recurring revenue growth forever, like a traditional SaaS business, you know?
I feel that. Like existing in a competitive environment, I feel like there's a balance that I'm trying to strike between running a business that is pleasant to work on and that we like, and like it's a sustainable pace and, you know, feels good, versus taking advantage of the opportunity that's in front of us and knowing that it's likely that it is not going to last that long. How fast do I run if I know the race has a limit, but also like I want to enjoy the race a bit as well?
Is that something that you actually like think about a lot, that one day this business will be dead, you know?
No, I guess I don't think about it like that, but I probably should.
Yeah.
Like I think about that from myself.
I don't know. I don't think about it from the outside about Tuple. It doesn't feel like something that, oh, well, pair programming isn't cool anymore. So
yeah, I think of it more like
we can't sell it.
Surely someone will come along and like eat our lunch eventually. Like this is what happens in the business world. Like somebody comes along without the constraints that you have, and you know they're small and nimble and they move faster and they just like figure out something that you couldn't get or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But you can last a long time as like the entrenched, previously popular solution too. Like there's lots of old legacy software that still makes tons of money. But like, will I want to run that company? Probably not.
Yeah. You need to start selling Tuple hardware so that people are really just locked in, you know?
Like big iron.
Yeah.
Mainframes.
Tuple OS and like the Tuple books.
I thought about doing an on-prem solution, like because sometimes people will ask for that, and like it would just be like, what's the smallest computer that we could just run our like signaling service on? Like I'm gonna send you a Mac Mini that you can just plug in some closet, and
that's pretty fucking hilarious to even think of like selling an on-premise version of a tool designed to help people collaborate off-premise. You know.
Yes. It's not a frequent request, but there were a couple.
No, but I think the people who want that don't want it so that everything is like in the gates. It's more just like that piece has to be on their server or whatever, so they just know for sure that the stuff's not going anywhere. But yeah, that seems like a Tuple move to me, to sell an on-premise version. It seems very aligned with like the enterprise sales-driven success of the company.
I keep having this thought over and over, which is like, tell me if you have any thought, like any ideas on this, of like giving Tuple away for free for personal use in some way that makes sense. Like I sort of like want to like have like a work persona and a personal persona that you can like flip between in the app, and like make the personal one free, but then have some sort of limitation where people are like, oh, I definitely wouldn't use this for work because of X.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out what that limitation is, but I generally agree, and I think it would be good for getting the, you've always sort of talked about like some sort of freemium play just to kind of like spread it, you know, which I think is smart. it is hard to figure out what that limitation would be. Like, I'm sure you've probably thought about it more than me. Like, ideas that come to mind that I don't think are necessarily the right solution, but are ideas as like time limiting the calls or limiting it to two people. So you can't have like three people on a call.
That one stands out. The two things stand out basically. One is a certain number of calls per month. It's like, don't limit the time, but just like limit the number of sessions. And the other is number of participants.
Yeah. Number of participants, I think, is like a clear one.
Yeah. It's like, okay, if you're using this for person, like, and you want to do one-on-one sessions, fine. If you want three, then that's a team plan thing or a paid plan thing. And more, like, as we go beyond and add mobbing support, like, that certainly would be in there too.
Yeah. We do a lot of three-person tupling. A lot of it is just, oh, I need to pull this person in just to get like their input on this thing that two people are working on for 10 minutes and then they bail, sort of thing, which I think is a perfect example of something that wouldn't really happen in personal use. You know, like, oh, me and Ben are pairing on something, some fun open source thing. Oh, let's ping Derek to see what, you know, it's just like, it feels like, I don't know, there's too many like silos to actually... I don't know. I don't think it would happen as often.
Mm-hmm. That might be a good way to, like, when we add mobbing support, so 3+ people, that might be a good time to rework that and make like a personal mm-hmm. plan that's free for two people, and then 3+ is for paid accounts.
Yeah, I wonder what else you could do. Like, is the other angle is like, is there anything more you could offer for teams that you don't currently offer teams that would make the team plan more valuable?
Yeah, I think integrations might be one of those. Like updating your Slack status when you're on a tuple call. Like having a really great Slack command or Discord command, things like that. Ability to like put a tuple session on a calendar invite. Things that happen when you're like using it to like collaborate professionally, like plugs into your professional workflow.
Yeah. There's like obvious team only things like single sign on, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
That you already have.
Yep. That's the classic. That one I feel weird about. We keep going back and forth on that. Like charging extra for that. It's technically in the enterprise tier now, which is just like more expensive. But it feels kind of like arbitrary. Like we just like put that in like custom contracts and things like that in like a much more expensive tier. But it's like single sign-on is just like, it's just good technology. Like it helps you be more secure. So I always feel like a little guilty putting that in there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do it. Yeah. There's a lot of precedent, but.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, if you care about this, you can afford to pay more, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of why it's in that tier.
Exactly. It's like, but why is it more? Like, I don't know, because you can pay more and you probably will.
Yeah.
But like we have conversations where people will reach out to us and be like, hey, can we enable SSO? And we're like, yeah, just pay us twice as much. And they're like, what? No. And we're like, yeah, that is kind of lame, huh?
Yeah.
I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what would make tuple more valuable.
Well, you're not a big enterprise, so that makes sense.
Yeah, we're not.
That feature of letting a third person join an existing call, by the way, is working. On our stage.
Nice.
So it's coming.
I'm gonna have to try that. Yeah, it's been nice to be able to like, well, not really, like the seeing who people are pairing with. I kind of already know, you know, we're a small company, so you can kind of already just tell. But it's cool to see like stuff like that. Yeah, more just like team aware stuff is maybe an interesting space to think in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone threw an idea out of adding someone's local time. Like the ability to see that. Like, hey, what time is it for Adam right now? Okay, it's 3 p.m. for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I use this app called Dado, which is like a replacement for the built-in macOS like date calendar thing in the toolbar. It has lots of really great features for that sort of thing. So you can add a bunch of time zones and they just like show up.
Nice. Is that,
and how you do can spell name it? Them. So D-A-T-O. This is like super high quality Mac OS software. I highly recommend using this tool. And it has this incredible feature where above the list of time zones, like I have an entry for each person on the team so I can see what their name and what time it is there. And there's a little slider where when I drag it, it shows like the time for me and the time for everyone else auto updates. So it's like, oh, I have some time at like 1 o'clock. Is Brad still going to be around then? And I can just drag it and see and know what time that is for him.
I love very good little stuff. High quality Mac OS apps. If I started like a fund or something, I think that's what I would invest in.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, are you making a high They're quality great. App that just like makes a piece of Mac OS better and is native? Like, I will invest. Let's go.
I'll send you a link to the guy who made it. It's Syndrasaurus. He's like does tons of open source stuff and makes Mac apps. And this page is like all of his Mac apps. And it's just him by himself doing all this stuff. He's like the most prolific person I've ever seen. And they're all pretty simple, focused tools, you know? So there's like that data one. He has something for converting videos to GIFs. A tool for just like blacking out sensitive parts of screenshots, like really purpose-built stuff like that.
This install flow is very nice too. I just went through the data one.
Yeah, lots of good details. He tweets about that sort of stuff a lot too. Like a lot of complaining about native apps, you know, which is good because you know that his are going to be good then.
Right, exactly. If you're mad, then yeah, you're probably good at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Or like his most recent one is, I guess, something you install and everything you paste as plain text by default. Instead of having to like Command Shift V, just like Command V, that's going to be plain from now on.
Oh, dude, that's I like his vibe. This matches.
Yeah, vibe. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff for sure.
I have to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen him do like a podcast or anything. It looks like he's been interviewed for some things. I don't know if they're written interviews or he actively maintains over 1,000 NPM packages. 1,000.
What?
Like this is a list of all the packages he's published NPM, 1,164 packages.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. I know. Like I have a hard time like, it makes me feel like I'm living in like the Truman Show or something. Is this is like a 52, test?
52,000 followers. My goodness, how am I not following this person? This is
yeah, good follow for Bacon. Sure. I would say.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
I saw that Peter Levels is following me recently.
That's pretty exciting. Peter Levels is great.
Yeah, I have that like, oh God, what do I tweet now that this person's following me? Situation.
Yeah, his standards for. The tweets of his followers are admittedly high, I think.
I just can't. I can't let myself think about that. It's too stifling.
Jason Fried followed me once after I did like a podcast with the Ryan Singer. And I think Jason thought it was really well done. And then like within 2 weeks, he wasn't following me anymore. I just tell myself, whatever, you know, like it just... People want to see different things. There's lots of people who I like as people who I'm friends with who just like don't tweet things I want to read. And that's totally fine, you know? So I mute those people whilst continuing to follow them so I don't hurt their feelings. But
I saw an idea for a Twitter feature, which is show you what percentage of your followers have you muted.
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting. Just like basically a pulse on like how annoying you are on Twitter, basically. Like pretty an much, anonymous yeah. way to just know, like, do people actually, am I tweeting things people actually want to see?
How many people muted you after seeing a certain tweet?
Yeah, that would be a really interesting feedback loop. I think Twitter would get better.
I agree, actually. Well, or something. Yeah. Like this tweet caused the most unfollows and mutes this month.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting. Yeah. I actually want that. That'd be an interesting report.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you could at least get the unfollows from something like Typefully, if they could kind of figure that out. The mute, I think all that stuff's private, right? But the unfollows, I think they could kind of detect, like, these are all the followers you lost this day, and this is what you tweeted that day, you know? That seems, like, figure outable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
yeah, any other stuff to chat about?
That's probably good.
Yeah, cool.
It's good chat with you, though.
Yeah, always fun to catch up. It's nice to have like a podcast I can just appear on once in a while without having to run my own anymore.
Yeah. What's the future fate of Full Stack Radio?
It's retired, I think. I'd like to believe that I'll do an episode when a good opportunity for an episode arises and just treat it like that, where, you know, a new episode comes out twice a year. Maybe sometimes the whole year goes by and it doesn't come out.
There was one in 2021, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was you, I think.
It was me.
And that was the last one. So it's been over a year, but I do occasionally find myself wanting to interview people again. Like the other day, I almost tweeted at Mitchell from HashiCorp. He's the creator of Vagrant and kind of the founder of HashiCorp. He was the CEO for a while, then he became the CTO, and now he's just an engineer there. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to him about that, because it feels like he probably has a lot to talk about in terms of why being a CEO sucks and why being a CTO also sucks and why just writing code is better. And, you know, I think it would be, we'd be an interesting conversation.
Totally.
So that was kind of like a recent one that kind of made me get that itch to kick it off again. But
yeah. Well, if you ever decide to sell the back catalog, let me know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that could be interesting.
I want to sponsor retroactively all of Full Stack Radio.
Yeah, yeah. Did Tuple ever sponsor Full Stack Radio?
We did, yeah. The Ryan Singer episode, actually.
Okay, yeah. We kind of did well. It felt familiar. I felt like I've said nice things about Tuple on the podcast before. That sounds like about right.
Mm-hmm. So yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. And that ended up being a very popular episode, so I think we got lucky there.
When does Aaron start? A couple days or something?
A couple weeks.
Oh, cool.
April. Early April.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. I think it's going to be good. He's already like sending me ideas and getting things done, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I keep having this experience where like the people that are really good are just really good immediately. Like they're great in their interview. They're great after it. Like they're exciting to talk to. They start doing interesting stuff right away. It's yeah.
Yeah. There are 10X people, I think, despite what Twitter would try to have you believe.
We're all, yeah.
And if you can build a company entirely of those people, that sounds pretty great.
I kind of feel like we're getting there. Like, I think that the team that we've been able to put together feels really strong to me. Like it feels like in every seat, there's someone quite good.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, if we keep doing this and keep working, like, I think we can make some really good software.
Yep. Yep. I think that's the move for sure.
Yeah. It feels good. I've had a few people talk about like Tuple people, like how good it is to work, like know that everyone is really good. It's like work with only really great people. And that feels like my most important principle, like my job right now, or like the principle I need to work by. It's just like everyone just has to be awesome.
Do people interact a lot at Tuple? Like, does it feel like a very tight team?
People interact a lot. I would say yes, people do interact a lot. Like we pair actually quite a bit. Like we pair on programming stuff, but also design stuff and ops stuff, business stuff. Yeah. Writing things.
The 10
like
people now, you said, I think.
11.
Right?
We'll be 11. Jeez. Yeah. Right? Isn't that weird? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not like a ton of like, so we use Discord. Like there's not a ton of like chat during the day, like chatting like, oh, how's your day going? Or what's your whatever. But there is a lot of like cross pairing throughout the company.
Yeah. Our Discord is very quiet. That's something that always makes me a little anxious as a leader is, do I need to be doing more to like make people feel like they're part of a team, you know?
Right. I feel the same thing. Like when I see tweets like how to build rapport among a remote team, and I'm like, oh god, I don't want to see this right now. I don't want to think about this and feel like I should be thinking about this.
Yeah,
hopefully it's just working.
Yeah, exactly. And if people are quiet, it's because they want to be quiet, not because you're like fucked anything up that's made them quiet.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
We'll find out once people start quitting.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be an interesting era to enter. We have not had anyone quit yet. You have not had anyone quit yet. That, I think I will take that very personally when that happens.
I'm sure you will. That sounds like you. You should just tell people when they join, just so you know. If you ever quit, I will take it very personally. I'll be very mad, upset for days.
Yeah, it will very negatively affect my own self-worth.
If someone says they're quitting, just say, why are you doing this to me?
Exactly.
What did I do to you?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
Yeah, well, it's, I remember in like the first days of Tuple when no one had canceled yet. And we had 100% of our customers that had signed up. It's a great time. And then once that threshold is crossed, it's less good. So I'm not looking forward to the first person quitting.
Yeah, it depends on the reason, I guess. It could be better or worse, of course, depending on that. So cool. All right, man.
All right. Well,
seems like a good place to wrap up. Yeah, thanks for having me. And anytime. Always fun.
Yeah, thanks. Take it easy.
Yep, see ya.